Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to The Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanEat.com, writer at Fanside. With me, as always, is David Vermeil. What's going on, David?
Not much. Looking forward to the start of the regular season and happy to be cold-free unlike somebody on the other line here.
So, there's the GM survey. We'll talk about that. That came out today. The Houston Rockets game was last night at the time we were recording this, Tuesday night. A little bit of a dress rehearsal, so we'll talk about that as well and just kind of what the rotation's going to look like and some players that might be left out of it, much to the chagrin of some fans probably. But let's start at the GM survey, David. You were talking to me and saying that basically the Heat didn't really come out on top at anything. They're not really getting much respect. I don't know if respect's the right word, but they're not really getting any notoriety or anything. Yeah. They're like one of those teams now, which is kind of strange. They're just another team.
What a difference a year makes. Yeah. I guess, you know, with the departure of LeBron James, I guess everybody perceives Miami vastly differently than they did last season. So, you know, just some of the basic categories there. I think, you know, GMs were asked 56 questions from what I remember, and of course they couldn't vote on their own team or their own personnel, so that excludes Pat Riley or whomever answered it on behalf of Miami. And then, basically, we're not picked to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, which, you know, I can understand. We're not going to repeat as, you know, NBA champs, or I mean, actually, not going to advance to the finals, not going to advance. Actually, not even going to win the Southeast Division, because Washington has a clear lead, I think somewhere around 64%, if I'm not mistaken, of the GM surveyed thought that Washington would win
the
division.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, 59.3%, and Miami has 29.6%.
Slightly lower and higher numbers than I thought.
That's last year they were 100%.
Yeah. I mean, the East is wide open now, and I think that's what you and I have been talking about. There are a number of different contenders there just for the Eastern Conference, not much less for the, you know, the finals, but I think it's pretty wide open in the division, but, you know, it just shows that Miami is expected to have a pretty big drop-off. And you might think that maybe even, like, the acquisition of Luol Deng was a great move, but even the GM said that that was not that much of an underrated move. I think Tyson Chandler going to Dallas was the best move as far as the best underrated move that took place over the offseason. So nothing that Miami has done over the summer has warranted any kind of attention. Coaching staff is, you know, barely getting any kind of notice there. So I think a lot of people are going to see Miami really under the radar there. They don't expect them to succeed. And from what we've seen in recent articles and interviews, it looks like the team kind of prefers that. And I think you and I have talked about that before, that it could actually play to the advantage of Miami. Because if people don't take them seriously, don't expect a lot out of them, all of a sudden you come in there not giving your 100% effort, and Miami usually is a pretty, you know, dedicated team, they can come in there and steal a couple wins, and that'll increase their overall win total throughout the season.
I'm looking at the numbers now, and I'm surprised Wade isn't even in the best shooting guard conversation at all. James Harden, 63%. Klay Thompson, 18.5%. Kobe, who hasn't played in like 2 years, 7.4%. Right. Stephen Curry, also tied with 7.4%. And which jackass voted for Kevin Durant as a shooting guard? Like,
I mean, it just goes to show that this can't be taken seriously. Actually, I mean, if you look at last year's survey, nobody predicted the Spurs to be the buzzsaw that was, you know, ripping through everybody throughout the course of the season. So, I mean,
because GMs don't know anything.
Yeah. Obviously not, because they haven't hired either of us. So, I mean, that's obvious that they really don't know what's going on. But, I mean, to pick Steph Curry, I know he plays kind of a combo guard, but he's mostly at the point. Kevin Durant, I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous. And to think, you know, particularly, and I know we're going to segue into this real nicely, but with Wade's performance last night against Houston, clearly he still has something left in the tank, and he's still a really great two guard. I still think he's a top five two guard. I think he's still maybe a top 30 player in the league. Maybe the numbers don't back it up, but I mean, you can't discount what he can do on a nightly basis.
I mean, you look at just his efficiency numbers from the last couple of years, and if unless every GM really thinks that's directly related to him playing near LeBron and being able to be more choosy with the shots, and while I do think that's a factor, he's still the one that has to shoot those balls and make them go into the basket. Like, it's not like LeBron's shooting it for him. Right. You know, it's if that were the case, Mario Chalmers would have been super efficient if that was the only factor. And we know that's for... And, man, I'm surprised he wasn't in the point guard conversation. He didn't even receive a vote. Steph Curry got a vote in that, too.
Bastard. I can't believe it. Chris Paul, what's he done? I haven't seen Chris Paul in the last four NBA finals. I've seen Chalmers there. So, I mean, again, it's all relative. It's all about perspective, and clearly these GMs don't have it. So I'm a little disappointed.
This is... I'm actually very... I didn't even get a chance to look at that this until just now, and I'm actually very upset. I haven't had... Unlike you, I haven't had an opportunity to let this sink in, so I'm still kind of just... I'm reeling right now.
Well, I mean, Chris Bosh, I mean, the power forward position is changing and evolving, but, I mean, LeBron got a number of votes there. He got a number of votes at the small forward position. I mean, Chris Bosh doesn't get a vote.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Tim Duncan, or, you know, what's left of him, obviously still very effective. But, I mean, are you going to stack up Duncan and what he does in San Antonio versus what Chris Bosh can do last year and what he's going to do this year? I mean, you got to take into consideration. Blake Griffin doesn't have that outside shot that Chris Bosh does. I mean, he got the number of votes. You know, Dirk Nowitzki, I mean, their games are somewhat comparable, and I would say that Chris Bosh is a much better defender. So
absolutely.
I mean, you don't know what they're looking for. It's all about narrative. They buy into it really easily. And that's kind of the scary thing, isn't it? That, you know, you're looking at GMs who are supposed to think outside the box, and you know, to their credit, they voted Chris Bosh into the All-Star game when the fans discount what he does. But then you would think that they would, you know, appreciate what he can bring to the table a lot more. Instead, as the survey shows, they don't really consider him all that great an individual player. So, who knows?
Yeah, you know, I'm just... Nobody voted. Jameer Nelson got a vote for underrated acquisition. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What, the Josh McRoberts thing never happened or something?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was considering what he did in Charlotte last year.
I don't expect him to win the thing, but Jameer Nelson got a vote before he did. are there GMs? I don't know the rules. Are GMs allowed to vote for their own moves? Like.
No. They can't. They can't vote for their own team.
Oh my God. You know who did that? It was a stupid Magic GM who's still showing love to Jameer Nelson. I can't stand the Magic. This is all their fault.
It certainly wouldn't be Houston. I don't think they want to give Dallas any credit for looking.
No way. And I see what you're saying. Eric Spoelstra got a vote for which coach runs the best offense. Oh my gosh.
Beat it to LeBron. I mean, that's a great offense.
It is. I'm surprised LeBron and Kevin Durant didn't get votes to win the Atlantic Division.
Or GM of the year or coach of the year.
This survey doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the Popovich guy gets some votes for coach of the year, and LeBron, who's clearly the best coach, GM / power forward / small forward in the league, doesn't get any votes.
Says here, Johnny Manziel got two votes to win MVP.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's, you know, a dark horse candidate, but he can certainly do it. I mean, we've seen him dunk on a 9-foot rim, so I don't see why.
All right, so this GM survey aside, What was your... So we talked a little bit about Wade last night. What was your... I was thoroughly impressed with Wade, but I'm trying not to get overly excited, because if this was just another vintage Wade game, he hit a few of... He hit his first six shots, but some of those shots were, you know, jumpers and stuff. So, and most of them were actually jumpers, turnaround jumpers, when he made his little head fake, you know, his little head nod move and to the turnaround fadeaway kind of thing. And those aren't going to go in all the time. So those are the, just like any player, you're either feeling it or you're not feeling it. And last night he was feeling it. So aside from those first 6-for-6 jumpers that went in, pretty much, afterwards, especially in the second half, he really started getting to the rim. I think the most impressive play of the night was that dunk that just didn't go in. But you kind of saw his age. You know, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, he probably would have gotten that extra couple inches that he needed to get up and over the entire Rockets defense. But he got to the rim, he was aggressive, and I thought that was extremely impressive last night.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that was due to his ability to knock down that shot or James Harden's bonded defense. So, I mean, you have to wonder. It looked like I mean, but you saw some kind of competitive spirit there last night. At least I did, you know, right? And that between him and Harden, they still got a little bit of beef there, and they were kind of going at it. I saw one play, like Wade scored, and then Harden scored on the other end. They were kind of jawing at each other as they went down court. That's kind of encouraging, because if James Harden, according to GMs that don't know anything, is the best shooting guard, then if Wade can still kind of hang with him, not literally, you know, then at least he's still a very quality player, and I think he's going to be a factor this year. So, I mean, you're right. Those first few shots, you can't take those into consideration necessarily as far as the overall package and performance, but he was really good. I mean, he was cutting to the hoop. He just looked like he was ready to still be, if not the top dog, 1A, kind of the way that maybe that first year of the Big Three experiment with, like, you know, him and LeBron were 1 and 1A. Maybe between him and Bosch, they kind of share that lead. So it was very encouraging, I think, for Heat fans to see that kind of vintage performance, like you said.
Jesus Christ, Austin Rivers got one vote for most improved or breakout season? Anyway.
Yeah, take a moment, settle in, and let it digest there, because clearly this is going to upset the rest of
Austin Rivers? He hasn't made a jump shot in 2 years.
I'm willing to bet Doc Rivers. Maybe.
Blake Griffin got a breakout season vote. He's kind of, people know who he is. Anyway.
Yeah, breakout. I mean, what does that even mean? I think like Anthony Davis got the leading, you know, breakout season, right?
It's he
like,
won last year. How can you break out 2 years in a row?
How much higher? I mean, at this point, he's going to clearly exceed, you know, Will Chamberlain as the best player ever, or some Michael Jordan type numbers.
That's quite a breakout year.
Yeah.
These GMs. I completely agree with you with Wade, that 1A, 1B thing. I think that's what it's going to be. I always, every time this offseason we were talking about Chris Bosh being the focal point of the offense, I just, while yes, that makes sense, and while, yeah, that's basically what the Heat were saying and Eric Spoelstra was saying this entire offseason, and Chris Bosh was preparing this whole offseason to be that top dog and the focal point, you know, quote unquote, of the offense. Dwayne Wade's still on that team, and he's going to want the rock at the end of the game. And he's a good ball handler still, and he can do a lot of different things when the ball's in his hand. So I don't know if necessarily that Bosch being the number one option, like we keep saying, is the right way to put it, because I just think it's going to be Wade, it's going to be Bosch, and maybe one is the number one option one night and one's the other number one option another night, almost like it was supposed to be when the Big Three came together, because originally it wasn't just supposed to be LeBron doing LeBron things all the time. It was supposed to be like it could be either one of these guys any night, and that's kind of what it was like in 2011, and they got away from that, and that's basically what helped them win titles. It was probably the right move, but Bosch did have 22 points pretty quietly last night. He had a good first quarter, but after that, he did score 22 points. Wade had 26. And when Wade's going like that, he's going to demand the ball. And his 26 points were a lot flashier, I think, per point than Bosch's 22 points. Did you get that sense too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I guess everybody's been kind of taking for granted that he's not going to be the player that he once was because of his injuries, and hey, that was lingering all last year with the whole maintenance program and everything else. I think every time he scored, it seemed like it was cause for celebration, and you know, that's great. And he even knocked out a three-pointer too, which, you know, that's always been a weakness in his game. So I think he's 5-for-13 now in the preseason, so that's not great, but it's a lot better than he's been throughout the course of his career, especially last season when he hit a total of 9 three-pointers. So, but you know what. It doesn't really matter as far as the flashiness is concerned. I don't mind that Bosch is going to be a steady influence throughout the game. If Wade's feeling it, I think Bosch is more than willing to defer to whoever has the hot hand at the end of games if it comes down to that. But as long as he's getting those numbers, I think that's all we really need from him. They don't necessarily need to be the flashy style points so long as he keeps hitting that outside shot. And he was cutting to the hoop. I think he burnt past, you know, Terrence Jones and Dwight Howard in a number of plays, so that's still encouraging. That's what we need to see. You know, him able to get past bigger centers than like Dwight and still being able to out-muscle, you know, smaller guys or, you know, power forwards that might be guarding him. So I think as long as we keep getting that production from Bosch, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, Wade scored 26 points in 28 minutes. I mean, that's impressive. Okay. So I'm looking at the minutes that they played last night. Norris Cole only played 14. Napier played something like 20. Chalmers was close to 32 minutes last night, but he had the hot hand, so that kind of accounts for, I guess, those extra minutes.
And that six-man role that we've been talking about.
That six-man role that Spoelstra stole from me. Luol Deng. I think I published that article before he... I don't know. Maybe I'm just psyching myself up, but I really think I had something to do with this. I don't know. I don't know if Spoelstra reads allyouganeat.com, but we got to find out. I got to get to the bottom of where he got that idea from. Clearly, it didn't come from the general manager of the Heat because these guys don't know anything. Luol Deng. Yep. What?
No. Riley and his 11 rings or whatever. I don't even know how many rings he's got at this point. He's clearly overrated.
Yeah. Well, that's all product of circumstance and timing coincidence. Luol Deng, 32 minutes. Granger, 16 minutes. McRoberts didn't play. So Sean Williams took all his minutes, something like 30 minutes. Bosch, upwards of 30 minutes. Anderson had his 20, 21 minutes that he played like last season pretty steadily. Well, so that's
that brings up a good point I just wanted to make there now that you mentioned it. What do you think of Anderson taking those jumpers regularly? I know that they were talking
about... Don't do it.
Yeah.
What the hell? He took a corner three last night.
Yeah, I mean, I know they talked about it during the studio analysis or whatever. Chris Webber may have mentioned...
Don't even get me started on Chris Webber. Oh, my God. He didn't know what he was talking about last night.
The future owner of the Atlanta Hawks is not a very good analyst at times, but...
Somebody said... it was Chris Webber or Steve Smith. I was in the kitchen heating up a pizza at the time during the halftime thing. And one of them said that and was, like, very animated about the fact that Dwayne Wade was a terrible jump shooter. Did you watch the halftime thing? I should have turned it to the World Series game, but I didn't.
I neither watched the World Series, and I think I kind of had the halftime show somewhere in the periphery there. I wasn't really paying attention, to be honest.
Good. I don't know why I was paying attention, because they don't know anything. But Dwayne Wade's a terrible jump shooter. He hit, like, a bunch of jumpers in that first half. Don't even get me started on Chris Webber. I already started, but...
Yeah.
I'm blaming it on Chris Webber.
That's a good idea. And
everybody else seems to.
So I think, the Anderson thing, I mean, he tried to pass the ball also. I mean, he was just kind of a bit of a mess there. I think he's still... I know they've talked about, some fatigue and lingering injuries and things of that sort, but just doesn't seem to be as effective as he's been over the last couple of seasons. So I just hope he's able to turn it up at some point.
Because
if not, I don't know what's going to happen with that front court there. I think we've got some glaring weaknesses there, and we're hoping for more from Anderson. I don't think we're going to get anything out of Haslam, to be honest with you, so... I'm curious to see what happens next.
I'm right there with you, because Haslam, he's collecting his money. He's just making money right now, because he's not an NBA player right now. That's obvious. Like, the few minutes that he played when he started that one preseason game, guys were blowing right by him. He can't make that jumper. He can't elevate on that jumper anymore. It's rough, and he's slow, and he's a locker room presence now. He's that Juwan Howard guy. He might be a victory cigar at the end of games this year. That might be it. And Chris Anderson is starting to show his age, especially last year in the playoffs. He was starting to show his age. Yeah. And if he can't play those 20 minutes that we need him to play, if he starts going down to the 15 minutes a game, 14 minutes a game, then that means you're playing Sean Williams a little bit more. Maybe they can get something out of Ken Birch, but you don't want to rely on that. You don't want to rely, because he got manhandled by Dwight last night. He tried, hats off to Ken Birch, but it is Dwight Howard. You're not going to play Dwight every night, but still. And then there's Justin Hamilton, of course, but he's recovering from a heart procedure still, and who knows if he's even going to make the roster, if they're going to hold on to him, or if they're going to, cut him or send him back to the D-League or what. So there is an issue there with that third big, because it really depends on Chris Anderson. And Josh McRoberts isn't healthy yet. That's the other thing here. So if McRoberts is really struggling, this is... Now he might miss opening day against the Wizards. That means Sean Williams has to start. That means you're really lacking depth. It's tough, and they might need to find a third big. And do you have to trade Norris Cole midway through the season for a third big? Is it that big of an issue if you're going towards a playoff spot? If they think they could do that, then that might be an option. But Emeka Okafor, we've talked about before, maybe signing him when he's completely healthy around December or something. But signing Andre Blatch from China, there's options here, but it's definitely a concern.
Yeah, I don't know. that's actually the subject of a piece I'm going to work on for tomorrow, because the front court position is a little scary. And I think you hinted at it in the piece that you posted today regarding the final roster and the depth chart. I guess you have Kem Birch in the final roster.
Yeah, that could have been Kem Birch / Justin Hamilton. It could have been either one.
I like the choice, to be honest, because to me, obviously it'll be more in the piece I finish posting tomorrow, it's about what you need versus short-term and versus long-term.
Uh-huh.
And I think Justin probably provides an instant bonus this year, but Birch probably has much more of an upside. I think his offense is such a weak part of his game, but there's so much athleticism there, and we saw his 13 rebounds against, what was it, Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly athletic enough. Yeah, I mean, he got beat by Howard, but as you pointed out, I mean, that's, how many players are there that can combine that kind of speed and strength the way Dwight Howard does? So I think he's certainly the better option at this point. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
And you kind of lumped Birch and Hamilton. Well, I did. You lumped Birch and Hamilton together, like it could be either or, but Hamilton's not a rebounder. He's not a defender. He's not going to body anybody up. He's actually more of a power forward, a stretch four, than he is a center. And Birch is the complete opposite. He doesn't even look to score. I don't even think he knows where the rim is, honestly. He doesn't look. He just he sets really good screens, number one. He rebounds like crazy. He bodies guys up. He gives his all. He's kind of like Udonis Haslem was, honestly.
It sounds like you're describing Joel Anthony 2.0.
Oh, man, you're right about that. Maybe he's just Joel Anthony. Which could be good, because they could use Joel Anthony. So, Joel Anthony finally found his way to Detroit, by the way.
Yeah, Sam Van Gundy's going to get the most out of him. I mean, considering they have Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond there, I mean, and Josh Smith, I don't see a lot of minutes coming the Warren's way, but wow, it's great. I mean, he was floundering in Boston.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see him at least somewhere where he's appreciated, and he's going to make that great segue to the coaching ranks as soon as he's done playing, so it's going
to
be awesome.
Yeah, good to get out of Van Gundy and get into that Van Gundy coaching tree.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm looking at this and looking at these minutes, the Heat can kind of go either way here. Shannon Brown didn't play last night, and James Ennis didn't play last night. And in the comments section of that post you were talking about that depth chart and stuff, a lot, and on Twitter, I mean, James Ennis is a fan favorite already, and he didn't log a single minute last night. So I don't know if that was by design. Eric Spoelstra said something like he wanted to give Danny Granger more minutes in that game, but Granger only played like 16 minutes in that game. So it's not necessarily like Granger went out and played 28 minutes, and Ennis is going to get a good chunk of that. Like, if you're telling me that you were playing Granger 16 minutes, then I don't know, like, how many minutes you're taking away from Danny Granger to give to Ennis, really. So,
I mean, you and I talked about this last season. It's one of those questions. As great a coach as Spoelstra is, his rotations have been, questionable. I guess that's the nicest, most bland term you can use. We never quite figure out exactly what he's going to do next. And all of a sudden, you've got Ennis kind of tearing it up and building this, I don't know, this incredible fan base there. Everybody thinks he's the next coming of whomever. And then he doesn't play, and he doesn't play much the game before either. I mean, is he in the doghouse maybe? How Spoelstra really takes into consideration, practice and the work that you put in on that end. Maybe he's fallen into, Spoelstra's doghouse. I guess that's a possibility. But even Tyler Johnson, who played so well the game before, didn't play at all last night, right? I don't think
he didn't play.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of hard to predict there. And, these are the guys that are on the bubble. They need more work. They talked about it during the broadcast itself that, while Dwight Howard and Harden and other starters were resting, we've got our starters in there. So it's kind of questionable to see what Spoelstra was thinking. Does he really want the victory that badly? Is he really just, they hinted in the broadcast that he's trying to find their identity, which is, perfectly Spoelstra-like. But, why did he play those guys that really need more work? I mean, we need to see more out of Johnson. We need to see more out of Ennis and to see if they can be consistent, especially when a game is as close as it was last night. I know that Chalmers and Wade had the hot hand, but we know what we're going to get out of them, right? I mean, we want to see more out of the younger players And it's part of the problem that we haven't had is, you know, in this Heat culture, we haven't developed those young guys, and now we have to start doing it because we can't rely on the great talent of LeBron and the big three in order to carry us through in the future.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night, and the only thing that I could come up with was that Eric Spoelstra decided that this is going to be a dress rehearsal of a regular season game, and he's just going to play it like that, regardless of what the Rockets do. If the Rockets put their second and third unit guys in, fine, that's their decision. But he already decided before the game started that he's going to play this like a regular season game. So on the other side of that coin, maybe he is really trying to lock down a regular rotation, and this is what it's going to look like. But if that's true, you're right. Like, you're talking about guys like Tyler Johnson and Ennis, who didn't get much work last night. They do need the work. I kind of look at that Tyler Johnson thing last night because I was surprised he didn't play. Kind of like how they signed Reggie Williams pretty early in the offseason, like, you know, post-LeBron, kind of early. And he didn't log a single minute in the preseason whatsoever, and then they just cut him. And, you know, Shannon Brown, who they signed after Reggie Williams, played plenty. So I thought that was a little weird. And I guess that's a practice thing, because the only reason Sean Williams is getting so much playing time is because apparently he's killing it in practice. So I don't know what's going on in practice, but you don't want anybody to fall into the Beasley trap where he looks great in like 2 or 3 minutes at a time, but behind closed doors and in the locker room and at practice, he's just not doing the work. And you don't want James Ennis to fall into that. You don't want anybody to really fall into that. And hopefully, you know, Beasley is kind of an extreme case, but hopefully that doesn't happen.
I think you just hope for more transparency.
Yeah.
I know, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do, but, I mean, you kind of hope that Spoelstra will be a little bit more flexible than he's been in the past because he can't, you know, he can't rely on that ultimate bailout in LeBron. So you want to see more transparency for what's going on in the practice arena there and how that translates to his rotation because, you know, I think as a fan, you want to see what these guys are capable of. Maybe they can come in there and spot some of these veterans that aren't necessarily doing as well as you expect them to, and maybe they'll add a boost. I mean, those games where we played exceedingly well, hey, look at the Cleveland Cavaliers matchup. Again, I know it was, you know, the third unit versus the third unit, but, you know, they went in there and they made it a real game when we were down almost 20 points. So I think you want to see that kind of production. You want to see that ability from them. And so I think Spoelstra needs to be a little bit more open about what he does as far as his rotations. The fact that he stuck with it as intently as he did yesterday, that's a little scary to me. That, you know, he doesn't have that kind of flexibility to say, well, they've got their starters out. Let's bring in some of our guys to see what they can do. And, you know, especially when they're on the bubble the way they are.
Yeah, maybe he's already made his decision that Tyler Johnson, yeah, maybe they're going to like option those guys off to the D League or something like that. But that's probably the best scenario for those kind of guys. But hopefully Ennis sticks to the regular roster, and I expect he does. What's kind of weird, and you talked about this before, is this culture of just playing veterans and almost being afraid to play young guys. And I think now is the time to do it, especially after last season. You come out and say, we need to add youth, we need to add athleticism. And now you're looking at what this roster is, and Danny Granger's your swing man, and Sean Williams is playing 30 minutes a game, and you know, you're playing a trio of Cole, Shabazz Napier, and Mario Chalmers at point guard, but, you know, Shabazz Napier's the only new guy out of those three, and point guard was an issue. It was a position of need. Why not play Ennis? Why not even, like, Tyler Johnson's might be a stretch, but guys like Ennis and Napier playing him more, and I don't know. And at some point, I feel like they're going to need to make a decision here, because you can either keep playing Danny Granger, who's been very on and off this entire preseason, while James Ennis has pretty much done nothing but impressed. I know, like, everything's relative, but there's going to be a decision to be made here, and that's not... And even a guy like Shannon Brown, he's not necessarily old, but, you know, he's not going to play unless Wade's not playing. There's plenty of depth in that, in the front court, in the back court, whereas the front court, there's not really a lot of depth, so you get the feeling like one of those guys could get moved, and Norris Cole's got that expiring deal, and, you know, he seems like the obvious choice, but there's just not a lot of minutes going around in that backcourt as opposed to the frontcourt. It seems like anybody could play, and especially with, I don't know. I feel like they're talking about youth, and there's no youth on this roster right now.
Right.
And nobody's going to get hot. That was the other thing last night. They won that game, that was great, but they played a second-unit Rockets team for much of that second half, and the final score is 90-85, and that's how they're going to have to win games this year.
Yeah, and I don't know if our D defense overall is strong enough to keep guys from scoring, especially not when you have starters in there. I mean, once the regular season starts panning out, I don't know if we're going to be able to be, you know, Deng has been solid defensively, but he's, you know, we saw some problems from him over the last few games. I just don't know that as a unit we're going to be strong enough to keep guys from achieving their regular production. So I don't know if we can really say that that's going to be realistic. Now I'm curious because, you know, what do you expect out of Friday then? Do you think we're going to see more of the same, or is it going to be more of those guys in the bubble that might get more opportunity?
Who knows? Honestly, I mean, if I was going to guess, it would be, I would say they'd play another like dress rehearsal type game, maybe some more minutes from Norris Cole. He only played 14 minutes last night. Maybe fewer minutes from Chalmers, because we know he's not going to go back-to-back awesome Hall of Fame Chalmers games. And Chalmers, we say Chalmers had a great game. He really scored most of his points on the free throw line. I think he was only like 3-for-7 from the field or something. Like, it wasn't, he was just kind of flashy. But I don't know. I'd hope to see something, maybe some more minutes for James Ennis, less minutes for Danny Granger if he was really trying to get Granger more minutes. I don't know. And then there's that elephant in the room that Josh McRoberts still isn't back yet. And everybody's kind of like hanging their hat on, oh, well, this offense should move a lot better and it's going to look a lot better with Josh McRoberts in. But Sean Williams has played well for most of this preseason, so it's not like we have a complete negative. It's not like we're playing Haslam right now, a power forward, or just like the polar opposite of McRoberts. Like, Sean Williams has been able to stretch the court a little bit. Teams are defending him on the three-point line. Maybe he's not as good a naturally gifted passer as Josh McRoberts is, but it's not like we're dealing with Rajon Rondo at power forward, you know? I don't know if this whole McRoberts thing is going to make as big as a difference as some of these beat reporters are saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, maybe that's the problem then, because, you know, he's got that lingering toe issue.
Yeah.
Apparently he's been practicing, right? I mean, so he's getting some work in with the team, in the practice court, but he's just not getting into games. It's kind of hard to predict exactly what they're doing there, and how they see, you know, apparently McRoberts is desperate to get on the floor, but the coaching staff is the one that's saying, no, you're not available. So, you know, is he going to be able to mesh right away with the starting unit once they're actually playing in a game-type situation? Is he much quicker, or is he quicker at all than Sean Williams? Because, you know, you're going to see him, I guess he's going to be driven off the perimeter quite a bit. You know, he's got that ability to knock down a three-point shot, even though he hasn't done it consistently throughout his career. So he kind of needs to be able to drive a little bit and then maybe, you know, hook up a teammate on a pass there. He's a great passer, but he needs to show some of that flair there. Is he much of an upgrade over Sean Williams? And I can't believe we're saying that because, you know, Sean Williams has been, let's say, inconsistent, and that's probably putting it as mildly as possible. You know, he's had some decent games and he's had some pretty weak performances as well. So is McRoberts much of an upgrade there? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I'd like to think that we're going to get the very best version of McRoberts that, you know, we saw in Charlotte last year. But with that whole toe injury, we don't know how it's going to work out. So I think that's a big question. And I'd love to be able to see him play against the Grizzlies.
Yeah, that'd be a great matchup.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how he meshes there and just to get him some practice time, you know, in an actual game-type situation.
Yeah, and that Grizzlies game will be a good test because that's a strong defensive team, and if the Heat are going to be banking on being a defensive team this year, which is kind of what it sounds like, are you getting that feeling too? Like, they're really, like, trying to drive home, like, we're trying to find the way to score balls. We're trying to find a way to score the ball on offense, but we've got to pick it back up defensively again.
I'm not actually getting that sense. I think they're saying that, but
that's what they're saying.
Yeah, but I think the more I see of the team, you know, I think they're going to wind up having. I hate to sound like Eric Spoelstra here, but they're not really going to have much of an identity. You know, and I think that's part of the problem. They're either not strong enough defensively to be like a Chicago or like a Memphis or even Indiana the last couple of years, and they're certainly not the offensive team that they were during the Big Three era. So I think they're going to be kind of floundering a little bit, you know, identity-less, if you want to call it that. I mean, I know he instituted positionless basketball, but now they're going to be identity-less. So that's going to be tough to figure out. Maybe they'll finally carve something. And maybe we will get that version of McRoberts that we could hope for, and they will be more, as you said, Spursy, and as far as their offensive output is concerned. And if that's the case, then with improved offense, it should lead to better transition defense as well. So I think hopefully we'll see the very best version. But for now, I haven't seen what we can really, how can we define this Heat team? I haven't seen anything clearly enough from them to say, oh, they're going to be this type of team or this kind of defense. Right. Have you? Because I haven't.
No, and to that point, last night, if Chalmers doesn't have a good game last night, which is a very realistic hypothetical, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh have good games. This is a very top-heavy team still, despite LeBron not being there. And people kind of look at this team and like, oh, you know, it's not as top-heavy anymore. Maybe this could be a more all-around basketball team. And that's kind of what Pat Riley has been pimping out a little bit, and kind of what you wrote in a few days back is, are they trying to oversell this team a little bit? But this team is not, is kind of empty still. And it's not like, you know, the depth and everything, it's not quite, it's not much better than it was last season. If it might be worse, you know, there's no Ray Allen, there's no Shane Battier, there's, you know, those guys aren't there. Is this identity just going to be Wade and Bosch have to have a good game, and if they do, that we have a chance to win, and if not, then we don't.
And maybe the story would be different. Sorry to cut you off.
No, go for it.
Maybe it would be different if Wall had had a big game yesterday. I mean, he was kind of, I don't remember what his final numbers were, but he looked kind of shaky there.
Deng's been this way his entire career. He could disappear, you know, especially on offense. He'll put in the minutes on you know, defense, but on offense he'll make a corner three here and there. But this was his issue. Like, Bulls fans had this issue with him in the first place. Is he disappears for entire games at times, and you know, on the offensive end. And Deng played 32 minutes last night, and I was looking at the box score. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed maybe half that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I thought Granger played a lot more than 16 minutes, but I was very surprised, and that's going to be Deng's thing. He's going to be there. He's going to keep the small forward position from being a complete negative for us, but by no means is he a top 10 small forward still in the NBA. You know, he's not. He got outplayed by Trevor Ariza in that game. You know, those guys are better than him now, and maybe Deng is going to go off and he's going to prove me wrong in a game. He's going to score 25 points one night, and he might even score 30 points in one night, but he's probably going to average something from 12 to 15 points a game, and it's not going to be necessarily anything. You know, you have points and then you have impact points, and he's kind of going to get those points in the flow of the offense. He's not really going to save anybody. He's not going to be that guy that's going to necessarily create a shot for himself. He's not, you know, like in the way that Bosh, Wade, or LeBron could have. You know, he's just kind of getting, he's going to make a basket when the pass comes to him, or make the right cut at the right time. And Josh McRoberts on the flip side is a guy that could kind of create baskets, and I think that's the difference between him and Sean Williams. Is Williams is kind of like that flow of the offense guy, you know, stand in the corner and make your jumper. McRoberts can kind of create some stuff, like not in an overly dramatic fashion, and he's not going to do it all the time, but he can create some stuff. So that will help. I'm not, you know, completely bashing the addition of McRoberts, but yeah, I think the identity is going to be Wade and Bosh, unless you think something different. Unless you think Shabazz Napier could make some dramatic... We talked about Napier a lot in the last two podcasts. If he can make some dramatic, you know, progress. And he was 0 for 7 last night, so that's why we're not talking about Napier like crazy like we usually do on the Shabazz Napier podcast, but...
All you can Baz.
AllYouCanBaz.com. So unless he just completely, if he can break out and become the breakout player of the year, as much as the GMs don't expect it from him, I don't know. Somebody's gonna have to break out. It can't be just Wade and Bosh this whole season.
No, I guess a lot of people expect that to be McRoberts, I guess, and then I don't know. Breakout is necessarily the right word either, though. So, you know, he's if he's able to produce the way he did in Charlotte last year, he's able to do the things that he did offensively, it's not too much of a defensive liability, then he definitely does help Miami create some kind of an offensive identity. So that's a big plus.
Yeah, in Charlotte, he had Al Jefferson kind of dominating. Like, Al Jefferson was just dominant last year.
Sure.
And I don't know if the Heat have somebody, like, dominant. Like, they have LeBron. Wade's a really good shooting guard. And to me, I think he's still a top five shooting guard. Sorry, Kevin Durant. You know, Chris Bosh is an excellent center, but I don't know if any of them are going to dominate. You know what I mean? Like, Dwayne Wade could dominate in a game like he did last night, but not on a game-to-game basis. And I think that's really, when you have somebody like Al Jefferson, that's your identity. LeBron James, there's your identity. You know, Blake Griffin is the Clippers' identity. It's not Chris Paul, really. It's just Blake Griffin and his dominating athleticism. The Heat just don't have it. You know, you look at the guy, you look at these teams in this GM survey that were voted above them, You have Joakim Noah kind of creating that Bulls identity. LeBron in Cleveland. And then you have the Wizards, who got like 3 or 4% of the vote. I mean, that backcourt is dominant when it's on fire. So, I don't know. I'm not. Now I'm kind of talking myself down. I'm kind of sad, David.
You're right. I just was making that same realization. I was like, God damn it. This podcast has completely ruined my outlook on the Heat season. An hour ago, I was like, yeah, 50 wins. Hell yeah. Southeast Division suck at Washington Wizards. And now I'm like, oh, we're going to be this mid-level team that maybe can scrape out 40 wins, and the GMs actually know what they're talking about. Holy Christ, how did we do a complete 180 like that?
I'm sorry, it's my fault. I'm sick. I'm just like, I've been in a crappy mood all day. We won. Didn't we win last night? Like, aren't we supposed to feel good?
Yeah, but, you know, as we just pointed out, it was against the third team, so it doesn't really count for much. And then you bring up Jefferson, and you're right, he's able to define the team. He's a low post presence. But then you think of Bosch, it's like, what does he do well? He does everything. And right. He does way too well. A little bit of everything, you know? So it's just like, you've got these guys that do a lot of good things, but nothing great anymore. And that's why this team might not be as easy to define as it's been in the past. And now all of a sudden, I don't feel like watching Heat basketball.
You know what, though? You know what we can also say is the Spurs don't really dominate that way either. They dominate with their ball movement, and that's what the Heat are going to have to do. And so we've kind of come full circle here. Is that if they're going to dominate, it's going to be as a team. And that's kind of what Spoelstra and Riley have kept pimping out this whole offseason, is ball movement's going to be key for this team.
So then we're back on to the McRoberts as the savior of the franchise, and he's going to help define his team into a much more Spursy-type offense where they're just moving the ball around. It's Wade and Deng cutting, you know, making back cuts, and then Bosch spotting up for three, Danny Granger opening up the floor, either you know, Cole or Chalmers hitting from outside, and then, you know, you've got this bearded god type figure and McRoberts, who's just making these incredible behind the back passes, and he's just igniting the offense. He's like Zeus from, you know, Mount Olympus with lightning bolts of passes, entry passes into Chris Bosh.
Josh McJesus.
I'm sure he's gotten that one before, and I'm pretty sure he probably hates him.
He hates McBob.
Yeah, I know that much, but I mean, I can't imagine him saying, yeah, call me McJesus. I think that's perfectly stuff.
Does anybody call him like McNuggets or something? Is that McDonald's joke played out? Or I never heard that, but maybe I'm just not paying attention.
McNuggets?
Yeah, like McDonald's.
I know what chicken McNuggets are. I grew up in the United States. I know what chicken McNugget is. But,
McDouble? You know, a McDouble double? Like, if he goes 10 and 10? I don't know. We'll figure this out.
Yeah, get that sponsorship money, baby. Make it happen.
Well, you know, the Heat Check is sponsored by McDonald's. They pay us a lot of money. It's not true. Sorry, McDonald's. Don't sue.
Well, it's their loss, if anyway.
Yeah, you know, Burger King actually just gave me a call, so McDonald's, hurry up.
Is it because your shift is up, or what? Oh, zing. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
All right, so... there's one other thing I want to talk about, and looking if that's really what's going on last night. Let me ask you this first. It's a two-parter here. Do you think that's the rotation we see at least for the beginning of the season? Last night's rotation.
No, because obviously with the presence of McRoberts, it changes a lot. So
other than McRoberts, like if you just give McRoberts the 30 minutes that Sean Williams played, and give Sean Williams the 10 minutes that Ken Burch played.
Yeah, but is that like a natural transition, though? I mean, I don't see Williams, he can't go in there and go up against Howard. Not that Burch did a hell of a job either, but I think it changes the whole thing. And it's terrible to say that McRoberts is going to be that domino that's going to get everything started, but it just looks that way, especially because of that versatility that he provides, so... I mean, we talked about the possible rotations at the beginning of the year. I think a few weeks ago, I even wrote a piece about the possible alternatives there as far as, you know, if McRoberts comes in and he comes out, who goes in for him, you know, the faster lineup, the bigger lineups. You know, those are all things that we have to take into consideration. So it's hard to predict if last night is going to be an example of what we're going to see in the regular season, at least not until McRoberts is getting some regular minutes.
Okay. And then the second part of this question is, if Danny Granger is getting more minutes and Sean Williams is getting more minutes than James Ennis, how do you think that this team what will it take to just completely flip the switch on this thing and say, we're giving Napier more minutes, and we're giving James Ennis more minutes, and we're going to call somebody up from the D-League, and we're going to give them some minutes, and we're going to actually try to develop some young guys?
Well, I think the only way that happens is if we're, you know, if we've got like 20 wins by, you know, February, you know, and we're clearly out of the playoffs run. I mean, and just injuries have taken their toll. Let's say Bosch is out for the season, you know, God forbid, but I think that's just the reality there. I don't think this, you know, I hate to go cliche on this here, but live by the sword, die by the sword. Miami has been this consistent for as long as I can remember watching them. Ever since Riley came on board nearly 20 years ago, he's just had a distrust of veterans, like you pointed out before. And I just don't see them doing, you know, going about face and changing the way that they approach their rotation and bringing the young guys in there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in the course of blowouts, you know, you'll see Ennis getting some burn or. You know, how else? I don't really see how it plays out. You know, he's gonna continue to go with Granger. Granger really has to stink it up. Even last year, you know, where you're kind of hoping that the Beasley experiment might pan out, and then all of a sudden he comes in there and you go, wow, this guy is capable of that instant offense, because he's never really provided that over the course of his career. But then last year, getting, you know, being stuck on the bench the way he was, he would come in there, and I think that first game he came in against Toronto early in the season, where all of a sudden he hits like 10 quick points, something like that. Just, it really showed that maybe he can come in there and be productive in quick minutes, although he did have his obvious, you know, defensive problems. So, you know, then you kind of see where Spoelstra says, all right, let me give Beasley some opportunity there. And then throughout the course of the season, he worked his way out of the rotation. You know, he barely played in the postseason. So I think he has to have an incredible paradigm shift. And I don't see that happening unless there's a desperate situation that calls for either a great number of losses or an in-game situation where you're losing by 20 or more.
Yeah, and, you know, this rotation, like we talked about at the beginning of this thing, was it's in flux constantly. You never know when Spo is just going to completely change it, when Beasley's in or Beasley's, you know, playing 16 minutes a game, or he's completely out, you know, at the end of the bench. And that could be the same thing for any one of these guys. And not to mention that Danny Granger could just not play some games. He's on that maintenance program too, apparently. I haven't seen any proof of that, but that's kind of what they said this offseason. Wade might not play, so who knows. Finally, I wanted to close out with this. We talked on, I think, the first podcast about Mario Chalmers' hair and what the future of that was going to be. And it started... Have you seen it kind of shape up and kind of look not as crazy as it once did? It's kind of taking some form in these last couple of games. Is this,
you know,
is this the hair that Chalmers is going to rock for? Because we kind of, is he going to do the cornrows? Maybe he goes flat top and just completely, you know, copies Norris Cole and tries to steal Cole's minutes that way. He's like, no, I'm the guy with the flat top. Let me in.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I noted it yesterday on Twitter that he looked like he had the same kind of hairstyle that a number of Rockets players did. So is this like a trend that I'm not aware of? I mean, I certainly don't have my hairstyle the same way, but I mean, he looked like he was on the wrong team there for a little bit, because he could have blended in with any number of Rockets players. Like,
yeah, you had Patrick Beverley and Nolan Smith. Like, we're the same person. It took me a long... I was like, Patrick Beverley is kind of playing differently than he usually plays. And then I realized it wasn't him. And I think the, what's Marv Albert, right, called the game last night?
Yeah.
He kind of realized the same thing, and he didn't really know Smith's first name. He kept calling him Smith for, like, until there was, like, a commercial break, and they came back with the first name. I don't think anybody realized that they subbed Patrick Beverley out.
It's interesting. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that you bring up the hair. I don't know exactly if it's in its final transition. Maybe it's like this living organism that's just going to continuously evolve throughout the course of the season. You know, it's funny that you bring up Beverly, though, because you see him and Chalmers kind of going at it. And the instigation move that Beverly pulled there, that was kind of funny.
I like when Chalmers gets in those positions, because he acts like the savvy veteran. I don't know if you saw him. Like, you remember when Lance, like, blew in LeBron's ear? I don't know if you remember that. It was kind of a big deal. And LeBron did the whole look away, not really, like, pay attention to you. And right. Chalmers did the same thing after kind of throwing an elbow at Beverly. Kind of just wouldn't look at him, kind of would just ignore him with, like, that half, like, arrogant smirk on his face that is, like, total LeBron-esque. I always like kind of get a kick out because Chalmers just like carries himself like he's a savvy veteran, and it's just like he's doesn't really play like that.
Yeah, savvy and Chalmers don't really go together very well. I mean, it's just interesting. And he throws that half elbow, and it's like, obviously you're not going to connect on it, and you're certainly not going to go up against Patrick Beverley, who will probably wind up demolishing you right there on the floor. So it's just, you kind of have to, you know, think what's going on through Mario's head as he does these things. But, you know, it's the ongoing process of watching Mario evolve, and I think his hair is a natural extension of that. So I think it's a good way to just look at the whole problem of Mario Chalmers.
Well, you know, like I said, his hair actually looked a little bit cleaner, a little bit more fluid last night. Maybe that's why his game was kind of cleaner and more fluid last night. But when his hair is kind of a mess, maybe that's when... Isn't there like a myth like this? Like somebody's hair is like...
You're thinking of the Bible and Samson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe his hair is like that. Like, it just like, depending on how his hair is styled, like, it's the kind of game we're going to get from Chalmers. And we'll just be able to know. And... More importantly, Eric Spoelstra will be able to know and kind of figure out how to set him up in his rotation.
Yeah, and then he's going to have to hire like a barber full time to just kind of travel with the team there and get him, you know, get him tightened up before each game so he can go out there and get the best minutes out of Sean. I think that's a great idea. It's worth looking into.
Was that on the GM survey?
I don't think so. Best hair? No, because I think clearly we would have won that with McRoberts. So Chris Douglas Roberts, maybe he gets a couple of votes too.
Oh my gosh! Did you watch the game after even a little bit?
No, I didn't. Actually.
It was Warriors Clippers after the Heat, and I don't know if you've CDR on the Clippers in that like old school Clippers jersey in the all blue that they rock. With his, he pulls up his shorts like extra high and wears the goggles, and he's just like got that hair thing going on. I mean, it's just straight like out of the 80s kind of thing. Like, it's just the ultimate. It bumps him up in like league pass race rankings like two or three spots, just him being on the floor and rocking that old school look.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because Simmons and Zach Lowe.
Yep.
They have no interest in watching Miami. And again, now we're going back to where we were a few minutes ago. Apparently, they don't expect much out of Miami, and there's no reason why I should either. So now I just don't feel like watching any basketball, and they're ranked pretty low in my overall league pass rankings.
They were ranked low. Do you remember exactly where they were ranked?
I want to say like 6th or 7th. Like, I mean, 7th lowest.
Yeah.
Sixth or 7th lowest. And that's only like the Magic were lower than they were.
Yeah, like Utah was like... Yeah. The 76ers, Boston, I think. Yeah, you know, last year they ranked, like, the Phoenix Suns, like, last or, like, next to last, too, and they were a blast to watch. But I don't think we'll be the Phoenix Suns this year. So, yeah, that was a little depressing. I kind of wonder, and we kind of talked about how, like, Zach Lowe's always been a little bit low on the Heat, right, just, like, throughout the last 4 years, but I don't know. This is easily the most depressing podcast we've ever had.
Well,
I blame myself.
When we do it next Wednesday, no, don't feel bad. Yeah, I think I've contributed. Next Wednesday, it'll be the excitement of opening night.
That's right.
We'll have actual regular season basketball, so we'll be previewing the Wizards matchup. You know, I think it's a good win for us because I think, you know, half their roster is out either due to injury or suspension. So I think Miami's got a pretty good chance of winning that first game there. So I think it'll be a whole hell of a lot of excitement from us, and don't tune us out just yet. So, you know, we're gonna be changing just like Mario's hair over the course of the season. Today we're in a funk. Next week we'll be much more chipper about the whole thing.
On the bright side, David Fizdale received votes for best assistant coach in the NBA.
Yes.
So we always have that. We always got the Fizz. All right. Thanks for listening to the Heat Check. Visit allyoucanheat.com to check out my writing, to check out David's writing. I lied last week. I said we were on iTunes. It was a blatant lie. Apparently, we had technical difficulties with SoundCloud. That's a work in progress. Check us out on SoundCloud and allyoucanheat.com. In the meantime, by the next podcast, we should be up and running on iTunes for a downloadable podcast. Thanks for listening. And thanks for joining me, David.
Yeah.